palliative care teams are now present in approximately two-thirds of hospitals across the U.S.
It's so valuable that we start that conversation, but it also needs to be continued.
The limitations that you outlined, Mike, are huge.
Welcome back, everyone, to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. This is Mike Winters from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore. And as always, we are so thankful that you're joining us here for another podcast. This will be published in May, so chances are many of you have perhaps had some fun on the May 5th or Cinco de Mayo holiday. Also, I would suspect that many of you are getting warmer temperatures. Climate's changing with respect to moving from the winter into the springtime and getting outdoors and enjoying a lot of stuff. I'm going to turn things to Dr. W. Let me bring in my three co-hosts. Peter, I'm going to you first because I was in a meeting and someone referenced that they were off at Jazz Fest. Is that a recent occurrence down there in New Orleans?
So Jazz Fest for the last 2 weeks had the city on fire, with everything from Pearl Jam, Dave Matthews, Patti LaBelle, Trombone Shorty, Lenny Kravitz, and everybody playing in the after parties, Dumpster Funk, Soul Rebels, was spectacular, spectacular. We hosted over 10 people at my home. It was frightening.
Oh, that's awesome. It sounds like a great lineup, this Jazz Fest.
It was wonderful. Harry Connick Jr. played as well, came home for a little bit. So it was nice. It was nice. And spectacular weather.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, the one opportunity I had to come to Jazz Fest, not only was the music, but also the food. And I think if I'm going to pronounce it right, the muffalettas and the po' boy sandwiches. Is that right?
Yep. So muffaletta. And then we had sausage crab po' boys, cochon de lait po' boys. So everything was just fabulous. And everything crawfish, from crawfish enchiladas, crawfish bisque. It was spectacular food.
Sounds awesome. All right, let me jump up to Philly. Dr. Greenwood, how are things going?
Things are going great. It's beautiful up here in Philadelphia. This past weekend, I was working in the emergency department, and it is the beginning of, or maybe the middle of, race season. So it was our annual Broad Street Run, which is a 10-mile run basically through the entire middle of Philadelphia. And I have to say, we got pretty busy this weekend on Sunday after the Broad Street race. We had a number of people who came in. Fortunately, we did not have any cardiac arrests, but with a lot of long distance related illnesses. And so this is my gentle reminder to all of you weekend warriors out there, take care of yourself, stay well hydrated, drink some Gatorade, not just water. And when you exercise, go hard, but be careful.
Great advice. All right. Well, let's jump out. Dr. Rodriguez, we've been waiting to hear how the move has gone and how you're settling in at your new institution.
SoCal.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I'm still waiting for my invitation to Jazz Fest from Peter. I have yet to attend that. Yeah, it's going well. I'm getting adjusted to sunny Riverside, new position and new challenges, which I'm relishing in this new research environment. Relish is sarcastic, if you can't tell from my tone of voice. And I am excited to venture back into the emergency department. I think I'll be starting clinically within a month, and otherwise just a lot of administrative duties here in research.
Sounds good. Well, we will circle back and ask for an update on how things are clinically when we do our next podcast. All right, well, let's jump to our topic at hand. And we spend a lot of time here on CCPM talking about resuscitation of critically ill patients, things to do to save lives. And the topic we're going to pivot to this particular podcast is actually palliative care in the emergency department. And it's based on an article that was just published in JAMA titled Palliative Care Initiated in the Emergency Department. And it's not a new concept. It's been around for quite a few years, but I think all of us would attest as we continue to confront boarding and increasing boarding and resource constraints, there are a number of opportunities with respect to palliative care in the emergency department, given patients' length of stay, their overall severity of illness, trajectory of illness, that we thought this would be a great topic to discuss here on the podcast. And timeliness-wise, this paper just came out here in 2025, so it's really kind of hot off the press. Peter, I'm going to turn things over to you to just kind of set the stage, give us the background of this particular study, and then we'll get into the more specifics.
Thanks, Mike. And I'm a huge fan of palliative medicine in general and brought it to our hospital, I don't know, about 8 to 10 years ago. So for the background for this article, among patients 65 years or older, approximately 75% of those patients visited an emergency department within 6 months of their death. So close proximity to their death. Palliative care teams are now present in approximately two-thirds of hospitals across the US. And so, unfortunately, these teams are often not available at a 24/7 rate, right? And so, there is an opportunity for emergency care to improve our ability to meet the needs and the goals of older adults who have serious illnesses and prefer to have their care, even end-of-life care, delivered at home. So patients receiving palliative care are often able to remain cared for and supported in a home environment, which leads to greater patient and family satisfaction and less prolonged grief among family members. There's a term called specialty palliative care, as we would know it, and those are the people who are board certified or specialty trained in palliative care medicine. And then benefits of specialty palliative care include a greater quality of life, improvement in symptom burden and satisfaction with care, an increased chance of patients dying in their preferred location to include home. And then palliative care can also reduce unnecessary hospitalizations, unnecessary diagnostic and treatment interventions, and avoid subsequent emergency department visits or even ICU visits. There is some data out there that shows initiation in palliative care and symptom management actually prolongs life, not shortens life, but prolongs life compared to matched controls. And then specialty palliative care is often not available in many locations due to workforce shortages. So there's this concept called primary palliative care, and those are palliative care skills or basic palliative medicine skills and competencies that can be taught and delivered to emergency care workers. So not just physicians, but physicians and nurses and mid-levels and PAs across a diverse group of emergency departments and emergency department settings. And so that's our background. And now for the objective.
All right, Dr. Rodriguez, take it away.
The objective of this study was to assess the effectiveness of a multi-component primary palliative care intervention in the ED. And this was a pragmatic cluster randomized step wedge design trial that took place in 29 EDs across the US. And a special shout out to my close colleague and friend, Eric Isaacs, who was an investigator in this study. And it was done in my former ED. San Francisco General was included in this project. And the clinicians involved in this study were emergency physicians, PAs, physician assistants, nurse practitioners, and nurses. And the patients included anybody over the age of 66 or older. They had to have a visit to one of the 29 emergency departments between May of 2018 and December of 2022. They had to have had 12 months of prior Medicare enrollment with inpatient and outpatient claims and a Gagné comorbidity score of greater than 6, which represents a short-term mortality of greater than 30%. They excluded patients with hospice services that had been designated within the prior 12 months, or patients who had at least 2 claims for a nursing facility stay. So they were excluding really people who, were already very engaged in hospice services. And the intervention was an evidence-based, multidisciplinary, primary palliative care education program for MDs, PAs, nurse practitioners, and nurses with different education modules. Prior to the intervention, these clinicians completed a baseline survey assessing their knowledge of primary palliative care and their skills in primary palliative care. Then, as part of the intervention, there were simulation-based workshops about serious illness communication. There was clinician decision support, and there were audits and feedback to the clinicians as part of the intervention. In terms of randomization, this was a cluster randomized step wedge design in which the sequence of intervention start dates were determined randomly with unique start times to each of the 29 ED sites. Basically, a standard step wedge design. In terms of the primary outcome was hospital admission, and the secondary outcomes were 6-month healthcare utilization in terms of ICU admission, additional ED visits, hospice use, home health visits, or hospital readmissions. And the other secondary outcome was 6-month survival.
All right. Well, thanks, Peter and Rob, for taking us through the background and then these methods. And Peter, as you alluded to in the background, essentially this robust teaching program or educational program focused around those primary palliative care skills. And I would say that the 4 components of that intervention seem pretty robust with the education modules, the workshops, the clinician decision support, and then looking at charts and providing feedback. Seems to be fairly robust in terms of that intervention. Now, John, we're going to turn things over to you. How many folks were included? And then what was the take home? What was the effect on primary outcome of hospital admission in this robust educational intervention?
So this was a really big number. So in total, almost 100,000 ED visits were included in the entire analysis. About 50% of them were included in the pre-intervention period and 50% in the post-intervention period, so split pretty evenly. When we look at the patients, the median age was 77 years old in this group, and they had a Gagné comorbidity score of 8. And if you remember what Rob was saying, a score of 8 actually equates to a short-term mortality risk of greater than 35%. So this was a very high-risk group for mortality. Less than 25% of the pre-intervention period visits occurred during COVID-19, but 90% of the post-intervention visits occurred during the pandemic. So there was a little bit of a skew there. And in terms of the primary outcome, so how did this intervention affect hospital admission? Well, when they looked at pre-intervention, there was a hospital admission rate of 64% and post-intervention, 61%. So there was a small difference here, but when they did statistics on it, it was not statistically significant. So it doesn't appear that this impacted the primary outcome of hospital admission. Now, there were a number of other secondary outcomes that were analyzed that included the rate of ICU admission, which there was no difference there. It only went from 7.8% to 6.7%. No difference in the rate of at least one ED visit. That decreased by about 2% from 34% pre to 32 post. There was no difference in the rate of hospice use. That was stayed flat at 17%. And then we looked at the other three secondary outcomes of home health use, at least one hospital readmission, and 6 month survival. There was no statistical significance between any of those in the pre versus the post intervention period.
All right. Thanks so much, John. And it would appear from the primary and secondary outcomes that this fairly robust educational intervention on primary palliative care skills was negative and that it didn't change rates of hospital admission or any of those secondary outcomes. I'm very interested in what the three of you think of this particular study, the PRIME-ER study. Let me just hit a few limitations that the authors identified. Rob, you can probably expand upon this in much greater detail and expertise just on that stepped wedge design and overall the vulnerability of that design method or trial design, its vulnerability to external factors that may influence, in this case, hospital admission. I think one of the things that many of you are probably already acknowledging or recognizing as we went through the methods as well as the results, and that's the timing of this particular study, in that so much of the post-intervention occurred during COVID-19, and really what impact did the global pandemic have on this particular study and avoiding admissions or those secondary outcomes of hospice use, home health use, and thinking about the pandemic and even availability of even home hospice or home health use and whether workers could go out. And just there was so much turmoil around the pandemic that I think inevitably had to have some impact on this particular study. In addition, the funding, the authors acknowledged that the specific funding for this study did not allow the investigators to offer communication skills training to the trainees. So education was provided, but taking that next step and really how to communicate with patients and family may have also impacted the results of this particular study. Now, in terms of just thinking about this study and its implications for clinical practice, Peter, I'm going to turn back to you since you started off with the background. If I was someone just kind of grabbing the abstract, looking at this particular study, it's a negative study. Should I start to steer away from palliative care interventions in the emergency department, or is that a mistake in terms of just reading the abstract?
Yeah, I feel that that's a grave mistake. And I'm not, no pun intended by that. But I would just say to be educated about palliative medicine is dramatically different than being trained in the communications of a goals of care discussion. So when we're talking to patients and their family members about what the goals of care are and actually getting patient alignment, patient trust, perspective taking on the provider's part, and then being trauma informed in your approach is something that needs to be not just written about and think that folks are going to assimilate that. It's practice and it's training. And so it's critically important that as we as emergency medicine providers at least do our due diligence and go through the documentation to see, have there been goals of care discussions documented? These are what I feel are essential skills for emergency medicine clinicians. And then reviewing records for those documentations, end of life care notes, and then palliative medicine notes. Palliative medicine is growing in its popularity, not just because it's end of life care, but their focus right now is really in symptom management. And so they're looking at the whole patient, not just a component of it. They're looking at the big picture and trying to reduce symptoms. So we're seeing a lot more referrals for COPD patients that aren't end of life care, for renal disease patients, for heart failure patients who, again, aren't at the end of their life but are having profound symptoms or finding their way to palliative medicine. But I'd be interested to hear what you guys have to say.
Really, really love all those thoughts, Peter. Let me switch to John, and then we'll go to Rob for to wrap us up in terms of thoughts about palliative care and then also this particular PRIME-ER study.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I agree 100% with what Peter said, and I can dovetail onto that a little bit. And the first point to highlight, and I think Peter brought this up, is really important, is palliative care is not hospice care. It's very different, and I don't think we can re-emphasize that between us as we go through this podcast enough, is they're very, very different things. But I will also say that I don't know that this study chose outcomes that were likely to be successful. I think that is for a couple of reasons. Number one, we can start the conversation in the emergency department, but if the training doesn't then go on to the people who receive the patient on the inpatient side, those conversations may or may not continue. And so these are long-term, I mean, longer than 3 hours of conversations that need to happen just outside of an emergency department. It's so valuable that we start that conversation, but it also needs to be continued in a very trained way so that the clinicians know how to continue those conversations and then provide the resources, which are then going to go on and happen while they are an inpatient, rather than just a snapshot in time of an emergency department visit. And so I don't necessarily think that they chose the right outcomes, or at least the intervention didn't match up with what they were trying to measure, which is why I don't think we're seeing a positive trial here. And so I think that's part of the issue. I think that this is a really good idea, and I think the premise of the PRIME ER trial is correct. I just would have liked to see a longer intervention with the inpatient providers and physicians so that we kind of saw if this intervention actually took.
Really outstanding thoughts, Peter and John. Rob, your interpretation, feedback, thoughts on this study and just palliative care in the ED in general.
Yeah, I love the comments by Peter and John. I also am a big fan of engaging palliative care interventions, and so I may have a little bit of bias towards this intervention and article. The limitations that you outline, Mike, are huge. When we go back and think about what happened during the pandemic, we had a ton of admissions of elderly people with, COVID pneumonia, with complications from COVID. If they were mildly hypoxic, they pretty much automatically got admitted. So that's a huge confounder in this study, and it's basically very unfortunate timing. Given the COVID pandemic, I would find it hardly likely to find a positive outcome from this study. The other limiting factor, as you mentioned, Mike, is that the clinicians that truly had the full intervention were very limited. We at, let's say, San Francisco General or at other hospitals involved, we have a ton of residents, we have a ton of different providers, and they didn't, all go through these modules. There were some educational interventions. It's not like the entirety of the faculty and the residents received the intervention, such that delivery of the intervention in effect was diluted. It's really kind of diluted to the people who actually went through all the modules and all of the simulation workshops and so forth. So you have a diluted intervention, and that also limits your ability to find the outcome with this intervention. So again, I think that this unfortunate timing and a little bit of trouble with administering the intervention to the entire departments limited the outcome. This study by no means puts a nail in the coffin of palliative care interventions.
Agreed. And I always love this portion of our podcast because I love hearing the expert interpretation and your thoughts from the three of you. And this has been super, super helpful, I think, to all of our listeners. And we would want feedback as well, your thoughts with respect to not only this study, but palliative care in the ED in general. Gentlemen, any final thoughts before we bring this podcast to a close?
So I would just say be a good ally and partner to your palliative medicine folks. And that would reduce your workload and reduce your burnout and moral distress in your emergency department.
Yeah, and I'd add, as always, listen to your families about their loved ones. Listen to your patients. Don't be afraid to ask about what their goals are, to understand them better. So you might not be able to address this in that 3-hour visit that you have in the ED, but you certainly can communicate it with whoever's hands you're putting that patient in after admission to prime the pump.
Well said. Really love this discussion. Please let us know your thoughts, feedback on this podcast, but we will go ahead and close this one out. Thanks again so much for joining us on this month's CCPEM podcast. We will very much look forward to talking to you on our next podcast. Bye for now.